what time is it? It's time to fry some fish. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 487 of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Where am I taking you, my loyal fish frying audience, this week? To the land of IoT. First up, Mark Pagulu from Semtech, and I are chatting about the future of IoT, what network infrastructure we are going to need to support our growing IoT ecosystem, where LoRa and LoRa WAN fit into the grand scheme of IoT, and some super cool new IoT applications. And a little later on, I also check out how an off-the-shelf IoT wearable was able to detect COVID-19 infection before symptoms had even appeared. So, without further ado, let's welcome Mark to the show. Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Excellent. Okay, so we're talking about the future of IoT today, but Mark, I'd like to start our discussion and look specifically at the networks we need to support our Internet of Things ecosystem. So going forward, what do you think will be the dominant network? Do you think cellular will still remain popular, or do you think it will be centered more around low-power WAN or low-power wide area network?
That's a good question, and that's indeed something that we are being asked quite often. So at Semtech, obviously, we are proposing one part of a type of network for IoT, which is serving the low-power wide area network, and this is really our focus. My position is really that you will see a combination of a few types of networks in order to properly serve Internet of Things. And if I can maybe qualify a little bit, that is because it's kind of a buzzword, the Internet of Things. And the reality, what matters is what kind of use cases you are trying to resolve, what are you trying to address. And when you take it from this standpoint, actually, it becomes obvious that you need multiple options of connectivity, which is okay, right? Because now you have a lot of players who are aggregators, cloud platform players, who can aggregate and make connectivity completely abstracted from the application developer. So that's going to be the key, and we are at the point where our market is ready for that. So to answer your question, there will be use cases more for high volumes of data connectivity, which definitely cellular and Wi-Fi are very well positioned, because let's not forget Wi-Fi. It's a very interesting technology, especially when you're thinking about indoor connectivity. And cellular is more positioned for outdoor today until 5G becomes, I would say, a bigger deployment. So typically, automotive and video type of applications would be a perfect match for this kind of cellular or Wi-Fi network. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have all what we call IoT on our side, which are the sensors, the trackers, the actuators. You know, all of them have different kind of economical constraints. They have to be cheap. You don't have power. They have to be low power. They are hard to reach. So you need a technology which, you know, offers a very long range, very low power, and is cost efficient. And this is, you know, where LoRaWAN can bring the contribution and complement the cellular and Wi-Fi.
So Mark, let's take a closer look at cellular networks first. What do you think are the pros and cons here?
So the cellular network, I think, I would say the pros is they have an existing business model, and the cons is they have an existing business model too, which is a little bit limiting their, you know, the way they are thinking about the business. It's driven by operators who built an entire, you know, huge business on paid connectivity, on the amount of data that you are consuming. So obviously they are pulling their customers, the use cases, toward more data. And so I think that's really to their benefit. It means they are in a very strong position to make new technologies adopted in that direction. And this is what 5G is really going after. But at the same time, it's pretty hard to look at the other side of the Internet of Things, which is, you know, very low price connectivity, sometimes free connectivity, very small amount of data. So this is a little bit their limitation here. The technology they are driving is not architected for this side of the IoT.
That makes sense. Now, Mark, let's look at the pros and cons of LPWAN.
you know, we have to be honest with ourselves. Of course, what we call low power wide area network cannot serve everything. What I mentioned earlier is probably the biggest limitation is that these are what we call low bandwidth connectivity options. It means you don't send a lot of data. It has to be small packet size, temperature sensor, humidity sensor, the location of something, and not often, right? Maybe once every 5 minutes, this kind of range. So that's really the limitation that we see in the LP1. Maybe the other limitation is that it's still new, I would say, 5-7 years, depending on the technology. So the network is still deploying at this stage. Now, there are a lot of pros, obviously, and I would say the biggest pro for LP1 is that, especially in the unlicensed band LP1 like LoRaWAN, the business model is very open. What is great about, and what I like very much about what we are doing, is we are enabling a lot of creativity and innovation. And Internet of Things, everybody is trying to figure out, you know, how to best serve IoT of things, what are the killer use cases and all of that. And the reality is that there are so many options, it's difficult to bet on one rather than the other. So cellular bet on smartphone, right? And those kind of consumer devices, and they were right? It's a huge market. Internet of Things is high diversity, myriad of opportunities. And for this, you know, we have to be humble. We cannot dictate a business model. We have to give options to the ecosystem so that they figure out what's the best implementation of the technology and what is the appropriate business model. And I think this is really, you know, our opportunity. This is a green field to build new business model for our economies.
That absolutely makes sense. So let's talk about some really cool applications. Now, I have seen some great applications coming out of Semtech lately, especially in LoRa and LoRaWAN space, including oyster farming, smart paddocks for smart cattle tracking, and smart plant care solutions. So Mark, can you talk about the role that LoRaWAN plays in these kinds of applications?
With LoRaWAN, we have been building the credibility of the technology, I would say, on the more traditional use cases. And I would add, for instance, the energy metering space, utilities, all of that. You know, we built the credibility, huge volumes. We have been able to steer the ecosystem toward that so that they can optimize the cost. But there is an equally interesting opportunity for everything which is related to benefits to the planet, benefits to our societies. And I think the use cases you have mentioned fit very well into that, right? It's about, for instance, food safety. That's a key challenge. It's also about air quality, for instance. It's another example. Why LoRaWAN? I think that's your question. Well, the first, it's very easy to deploy. That's the reality. You have an idea, you have a business idea, you have a use case idea, and you believe into something. Well, it's very easy to get from the ecosystem some what we call a gateway, which is a network element. You can get some sensors, build an application. You can prototype, for instance, with Amazon AWS cloud platform, very quickly prove that it can work, and then go to the next phase. You just invest as your business is scaling, right? If your business is a small area type of sensors monitoring, well, you know, you don't need to invest a lot in the hardware, and you invest maybe a little bit more in the data analytics. Now, if your business is growing, you know, you just add more equipment, and then you bring the profitability. The barrier to entry is very, very low compared to any kind of other technologies such as cellular technologies.
All right, Mark, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, since you've already been on my show, I can't give you my normal question. So, Mark, if you could have one person to have a meal with you tonight, who would it be? It doesn't matter if they're alive or dead on the other side of the planet. Who would you choose to have a meal with?
Obviously, the way I'm going to use a that will be filtered. That's a very good one and not easy. You caught me by surprise, but that's good, right? That's part of the game, I guess.
That's right.
I think so. It has really absolutely nothing to do with what we have been discussing, but I'm always interested in human philosophy and all of that. And somebody like Gandhi, I would love to have somebody like Gandhi and to speak with this person to understand, you know, how he started his journey, how he built such a momentum around his philosophy, and would he do anything different, right? Looking back.
That's wonderful. And thank you for playing along with my silly question, Mark. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Manya. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Also, if you'd like more information about Semtech and specifically their recent LoRa Cloud Locator announcement, I would highly recommend checking out my fellow EE Journal editor Max Maxfield's feature article this week called OMG, Where Are My Assets? And you can check out this article by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com or by heading on over to the article section of EE Journal as well. So what if wearable technology could help us detect COVID infection before symptoms even appear? Well, it seems so, and the wearable at the center of this new discovery is actually a fertility monitor. So, a group of researchers from Imperial College London, University of Basel in Switzerland, Dr. Reich Medical Laboratory in Liechtenstein, and the McMaster University in Canada recently tested a group of around 1,100 people and found that the AVA fertility bracelet, which is on the market today, could indeed diagnose COVID-19 infections ahead or even in the absence of telltale symptoms. So, this AVA fertility bracelet, which retails for around $279, is able to record heart rate, wrist skin temperature, respiratory rate, HR variability, and blood flow overnight. During this study, which took place between April 2020 and March of 2021, the participants of this study were outfitted with these AVA fertility trackers, which were also connected to a smartphone. Now, the people in the study were also instructed to record any behaviors that would interfere with the results of the tracker, like medication, alcohol, or recreational drug use. And were also instructed to record any COVID symptoms as well. And get this, this study recorded a total of 1.5 million hours of physiological data. And during that time, over that year time frame or so, 127 people were confirmed as being infected with COVID-19. Now, here comes the interesting part. 66 of those 127 people who wore their device for at least 29 consecutive days showed significant changes in their body before, during, and after infection, including higher heart rates and higher respiration, all compared to those who tested negative. So, with the combination of this unique algorithm and the AVA fertility tracker, this team was able to correctly identify 68% of positive cases 2 days before the onset of symptoms. Wow. So, in the associated paper written by this global team of researchers, it says, wearable sensor technology is an easy-to-use, low-cost method for enabling individuals to track their health and well-being during a pandemic. Our research shows that these devices, partnered with artificial intelligence, can push the boundaries of personalized medicine and detect illnesses prior to symptom onset, potentially reducing virus transmission in communities. Wow. So yes, this is not the end-all or be-all of COVID testing, but I'm hopeful that this is a sign of things to come. That as technological innovators, we can keep looking for alternative ways to test and treat COVID-19 and any other pandemics that come our way. So, if you want even more information about this study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should! You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you would like to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. It really does help. Also, if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at Amelia, that's A-M-E-L-I-A, at eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 24th, 2022, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.